Hey, everybody. Welcome to Just for Variety. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. Today is January 26th, 2023, and I've got two guests on this week's episode. First up, Alan Cumming, the award-winning actor, singer, and everything, talks about his new gig hosting the U.S. version of the reality competition show, The Traitors. He also talks about his return as host of AARP's Movies for Grown-Up Awards in Los Angeles on January 28th. Then later in the show, Avan Georgia. Most known for his work as a child star in Victorious, Georgia joins me to talk about his directorial debut, Dormouse, and why thirst trap marketing proved fruitful in getting people to watch his movie. I'll be back with Alan Cumming after this short break. Welcome back to Just for Variety. I'm talking to Alan Cumming. The actor recently made his reality competition show hosting debut of Peacock's The Traitors. The series, which originated in the Netherlands, is an elaborate game of mafia, with not-so-famous celebs like Ryan Lochte and Brandy Glanville competing against so-called regular people for cash prizes. I caught up with Cumming in New Zealand, where he was touring his one-man cabaret show, Alan Cumming Is Not Acting His Age. We talked reality TV and also his return stateside to host AARP's Movies for Grown-Ups Awards in Los Angeles on January 28th. Plus, I ask him when we'll be seeing him back on Broadway.
Hi, Mark. How are you? Can you hear me?
Did you hear me?
I can hear you, yeah.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good. Are you sure you can hear me?
I can definitely hear you, yes.
Okay, good. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm just waking up in New Zealand.
Well, I've been up in Los Angeles, so here we go.
what time is it?
It is 11:46 a.m.
Gorgeous. Oh, that's not too bad, actually. Because I thought it'd be... Anyway, I'm just so screwed up with all these time zones. And I'm moving different places all the time. And it's just
are you actually waking up on Tuesday? Is it Tuesday for you now?
Oh, yes, yes. Are you waking up on Monday?
Yep, it's Monday here.
Oh, that's why. Yes, that makes sense then.
So I don't want to keep you too long. I know you got to get to an airport and such. So let's talk about Movies for Grown-Ups. So my first question for you is, when did you first feel like you were grown up? Do you feel like a grown up?
It's so funny because I talk about this in my show that I'm doing here. About this exact thing, and it's I actually only felt I was a grown up when I was asked to play Eli Gold in The Good Wife, because that was the moment when I thought, I actually remember thinking, why are they asking me to do this? Because I hadn't really played real people before that, and I was like, I remember I said, why are they asking me? He's a middle-aged guy in a suit, and I went, wait. I'm a middle-aged guy. If I could just sit on, bingo. And so that was actually the moment. I know it's quite late on, but that I actually felt like, oh yeah, I can do this. I'm a grown-up. I can. That's why they're asking me. So I think it comes to people at different times.
When you hit the set with Christine Baranski, were you like, I'm a grown-up now?
No, I kept that to myself. No, it was when I did The Good Wife, like, you know, it was years ago. It was like 2010 or something. It was relatively, you know, late on in my age to have realized such a thing.
Do you still feel like a grown up, or was it a one off?
No, I feel like a grown up now. I'm really fascinated by the whole idea of aging. That's what my show's about right now. I mean, it's called Alan Cumming Is Not Acting His Age, and I think you can be, you know, you can be a grown up and do grown up things, but still have curiosity and still be youthful in your outlook at life. And I think that's what we're all fighting. I mean, I have these imaginary people, these sort of little people with clipboards, mean little people sort of saying they're the acting your age police and tell you what you've got to do. Like, you've got to just play golf now instead of dancing and wear more cardigans and things. And I think we're fighting against that all the time, against other people's ideas of how we should live our lives and how we should age. And so I'm constantly sort of just thinking, I'm going to do what I want. I'm going to do what I like. And, you know, and I think that's what we've got to fight against.
I mean, it's so I literally, I just turned 53 last week.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. And this whole idea of what is 53? How are you supposed to act? I still feel like I'm the class clown. I don't know what it means. I mean, we had ideas when we were kids. I mean, I remember when I was, you know, coming out and going to the bars and being like, if I'm 30 and I'm in a gay bar, shoot me.
Oh, God.
You know, really? And it's just this idea of what being a grown-up is all about. And my thing is like, act your age, it's just act yourself. You don't want to play golf? Don't play golf. You want to go dancing? Go dancing. It doesn't matter how old you are.
Absolutely. I'm totally with you. But you know, we are up against it because people are very, I mean, in all areas of life, you know, very judgy about, there's an order that we must. And I think the whole thing about the order about aging has been sort of in place for so long. And it's been magnified by Hollywood in a very unhelpful way. So it's nice, I think, that there's sort of people that are taking it upon themselves to sort of try and hold a mirror up and change things.
Well, I love that this award show is the one award show where I think celebrities actually brag about their age and how old they are.
Yes, it's a safe space. It's funny. It is such a fun show, actually. I've done it a few times.
I know.
Really a hoot.
What are some of the grown-up films that you've watched in the past year that you really love?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I there's a couple of films I just really thought were, I loved Everything Everywhere All at Once. For me, that was an incredible film, piece of filmmaking, and some great, you know, performances by a couple of several actors who have you know, and Jamie's getting the Career Achievement Award. I thought that was amazing. I thought To Leslie with Andrea Riseborough was a stunning, like an incredible performance. Yeah. Really well directed too by Michael Moore. So those are a couple of the things that both those films are kind of slightly outside the Hollywood machine in terms, I mean, it's obviously Everything Everywhere All at Once is doing really well, but it's really, it's sort of, those are the films that kind of interest me more, the sort of maverick, slightly going against the cookie cutter grain of how, of what we see. And I think I really hope that people who are making the decisions about what films get financed are listening and see that people want new and different kind of things.
I mean, obviously your career, you've done the spectrum, you've done the big blockbuster, you've done the tentpole movies, you've done very independent movies. Is there that one project out there that's still you're yearning to do, or someone you really want to work with that you haven't worked with yet?
No, I mean, no is the short answer. I don't yearn. I don't think yearning is a very healthy thing to do. I keep myself open and to possibilities and, you know, and frankly, weird things. Some of, like The Traitors, for instance. Why did they ask me to do that? I had such a blast doing it. And so, you know, things like that, I really enjoy just sort of, you know, I am eclectic and I think eclecticism breeds eclecticism. And I was just thinking, you know, last year, the projects that I did, I did a solo dance theatre piece with the National Theatre of Scotland. I became a dancer at age 57. Mm. And that was about Robert Burns, you know, my national poet. So it was incredible. It was an incredible thing to do on so many levels. And then I did a movie in which I played Freud, and I did another thing of Chicago, the follow-up to Chicago, Schmigadoon.
Yeah.
I did The Traitors. It was just a random selection of really intense things, but so, so different. And that's what I like. And I think I actually love the idea that people see me in a way where they think, well, he might do this, or, you know, it's a bit of a left field choice, but I think it's just great to be open to different things. I really, and also you have, you know, sometimes you have the most fun in the most random places. Doing The Traitors was hilarious.
Did you know about the Traitors beforehand? Were you a fan of the original version, or was it something so new to you also?
Oh God, no, I never. I mean, because it was only done in Holland before. Right. Before, so when they asked me to do it, I said, "What?" And they sent me the Dutch one. I watched it, I was obsessed with that. But then when they told me like how they, you know, I had a talk with them and I basically got. I said to them, "Oh, you want me to do this like a James Bond villain?" Mm. And they were like, "Yes." And so getting to sort of camp it up. in a form that is not that at all, and getting to sort of play a character, it was so. I mean, that's what I like, is like going into something that people think they know what it is, and then sort of, you know, shaking it up and doing something different with it. That was really exciting to me.
Have you spoken to him about a season two already? Is it happening?
It's not been greenlit. It's sort of been availability checks and stuff, all that stuff, but no, it hasn't been nothing definite yet, although it's only Monday morning.
Do you want to do a second season?
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, I thought it was absolutely. I had such fun. I'd do it in a splash.
I was surprised to hear that neither you nor the contestants actually stay in the castle.
I know. That's true. We don't. Actually, I stayed in a nice little house in Inverness. They stayed in the Inverness Airport Hotel. and also they were sort of trapped in it. They weren't allowed to talk to each other and everything. So they had to stay in the rooms. They didn't have phones. And they had security to sort of make sure they didn't, you know, be naughty.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's hilarious. Absolutely hilarious.
So who, if there is a season two, who's your dream cast? Who would you love to see as a contestant?
I have no knowledge of that world. And I wouldn't, I mean, I this has been an education for me in a whole new thing I didn't even know existed. So I'm no expert on that. But I mean, it seems to me there's a lot of I actually really, you know, the British one didn't have reality celebrities. Right. It just had real people. And I don't know. I think it's interesting. I'm not sure why they did that, but obviously it kind of pips things up.
Right.
But I don't know who I would choose. It's not my field of expertise, alas.
I just feel like you would get a Spice Girl or one or two in that castle.
Sure, that would be hilarious. But I don't know. I mean, I think it's such fun. And also I think what I realized, you know, I've been talking a lot about it, but I think is that people, it's so fascinating to see people lie. Mm. We do, you know, blatantly lie, because we all lie all the time. And I think it's just so juicy to see people do it and see how good or bad they are.
Were you a fan of this kind of reality television before, or this really is just your complete awakening?
Not at all. I mean, I'd seen in hotel. I don't really watch TV. And, you know, it's sort of like I go to this room and watch something on purpose.
Right.
I don't just put it on. But when I'm in hotels and things, I sort of flick through it. So I do sometimes watch. And, you know, they're kind of like crack, a lot of these shows. You just can't help go on to the next one. I'm not a reality TV person. I guess now I am.
Now you are.
That's right.
When are we going to see you on Broadway again, Alan?
I don't know. There's sort of various, you know, there's always various
things.
It's like, yeah, it's juggling possibilities. But there's nothing definite. So I don't know. I'm really enjoying doing these concerts. I do this, my show, Alan Cummings, I think it's age. And then I'm doing a thing in next thing in New York. I'm doing at the Cathy Carlisle for 2 weeks in April with Ari Shapiro from NPR. We do a show together called Och right. and Oi. So I'm doing that with Ari, which will be a hoot. At the Carlisle, which is always fun to perform at the Carlisle.
Listen, you know who the first person I saw perform at the Carlisle?
Who?
Eartha Kitt.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. That'd be amazing.
Yeah. Eartha Kitt at Carlisle.
It's such an incredible room because it's like this pokey little place and people are, you know, you have to elbow your way past waiters to get up to the stage. But it's so sort of legendary and you really feel, it is a beautiful room to play, even though people are munching on. I did a live album there and I actually stopped the show because a lady had a steak that was so huge and eating it basically at my feet. And I said, I thought that was a baked potato. I thought it was a huge baked potato. It was actually a lump of carcass. This is great for a vegan to be emoting above a smelly old steak. But you know, that's showbiz, I suppose.
Did you make them take it away?
I just sort of shamed her into not eating it. I mean, she just kind of like left it to the side of her plate after that.
That's good advice. If anyone's going to see Alan Cumming at Cafe Carlisle, make sure.
Yeah, please have the salad.
Have a salad, not too crunchy, because we don't want to disturb you.
Well, I don't mind the clinking of glasses and cutlery. I don't mind that. It's just the sort of smell of rotten flesh, you know, that's wafting up as I'm singing some emotional song. I draw the line.
What is the song that you get most emotional singing?
There's in this show I sing. What's it called again? When We Were Young. See, all the songs are kind of about aging. So I sing When We Were Young by Adele. And it's such a beautiful song. It's also, you know, it's just so mournful and sad. It's about sort of the past and loss, and a relationship that's gone wrong or something. And so I that one just gets me. It's such a builder as well. I love a builder.
You love a builder.
Yeah, who doesn't?
Alan, thank you so much. I know you have to get to the airport. This was awesome.
Thanks, Mark. I'm slowly packing as I speak to you.
Yeah, no, I gotcha. And I will see you next week at the Movies for Grownups Awards, and I promise not to be eating a steak in front of you.
Yes, please. That'd be nice. All right, I look forward. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Safe travels. That was Alan Cumming. We're going to take a short break right now, but when we return, Avin Jogia joins me to talk about his directorial debut, Dormouse, and the decision behind his thirst trap marketing campaign. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Just for Variety. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. Avin Jogia is best known for his work as a teen heartthrob on the tween show Victorious. Now 30 years old, Jogia recently made his directorial debut with Dormouse, an indie noir starring Haley Lu. Jogia also wrote and co-stars in the movie. I talked to Jogia shortly after he released a TikTok video showing his shirtless body. Sometimes you have to take marketing into your own hands, and that's what he did. Hoping TikTok users watched for his bod, the video then shows him asking people to watch Dormouse. Here's Avin Jogia.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, see if I can see you put my thing on. Hello. Hey.
What's up, buddy?
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I just flew out of LA and I got into Vancouver for the Q&A for this film. So I've been sort of running around like a chicken with my head cut off, but I'm happy that's finally starting to settle and still doing press stuff and all that stuff. How about yourself?
I'm good. Just LA. It's cold in LA, but probably colder in Vancouver, I imagine.
Yeah. You know what's funny? I went from LA to, I think it's colder in LA. Something about the desert at night. It's like, you're just more, I don't know what it is. It's just like you and the universe, and it's like way colder. We get overcast, so it's like sort of insular in a way.
Right. Yeah. So congratulations.
Hey, thanks.
You write, you direct, and you star in a movie.
Yeah, I mean, I starred by happenstance because we shot this during COVID, like before there was a vaccine mandate or any of that stuff, early COVID, and there was quarantines in Canada, and it, you know, it was nuts. So I the only reason I'm acting in it is because, you know, it's all hands on deck and I couldn't get to the actor I wanted to come and quarantine in Canada. But I wrote it and I directed it. And, you know, it was a hell of an undertaking.
Yeah, tell me about taking that. That's a lot to undertake to do all of that. It's like sometimes just direct, sometimes just star, maybe just write.
Yeah.
And I imagine you're a producer on it too. So it's like,
indie filmmaking, it's DIY. I mean, like you don't have a studio behind you. Your tenacity becomes the engine of the film. Right. And when you're making a DIY film, it's like, the if you stay on it, it some things happen. If you don't, it goes away. And so I wrote this 7 years ago, I was 23. I just got off of these two big shows for teens, and I got off them, and that sort of Shia LaBeouf meaty acting roles weren't really there for me as a brown man. This is like 2013-14. Those roles just didn't exist.
Right.
And so you come off of this sort of like this idea of like, okay, I've done the teen things. I'm going to use that as a leap board to go do some real work. The real work wasn't really even there for me. So I started writing, and I wrote this, cause I wanted to see actors of color in a noir, just like a noir that we'd seen 1,000 times before. There's nothing specifically unique or special about this noir other than the fact that, you get to see people of color, have the trench coat and smoke the cigarette and drink the whiskey and do the thing, do the noir thing. And so I wrote this sort of like as a way of like sort of getting my frustrations out, not just about the industry at large, but also my frustrations about the world. This is the before there was a mainstream understanding of, the abuses of power in the justice system and the abuses of power of the wealthy and all that stuff. And then like I realized that like directing and writing is, it's not like it's not easier. You know what I mean? Like I got out of the acting thing and I was like, wow, the roles I don't want are here. You know, it will be like have less resistance trying to direct and write. That's not true. And so I went through that process and realized as I got towards the end of it, like as unfortunately the world became more aware of the darknesses, like this is, like, I wrote this before Epstein. I wrote this before the BLM movement and the understanding of like the police system and how it works for some people and not for others.
Mm.
And so like the film sort of caught up with the times and what was going on. And then there was open doors. But I mean, for 7 years, you just have to have a lot of tenacity to keep. Tenacity is also like you have to be angry enough to be like, oh, I think this actually is worth saying.
Talk to me more about, after doing those, earlier shows, was your team or were you yourself telling yourself, oh yeah, I'm going to get those Shia LaBeouf roles. I'm going to get, like, there's no question there.
I think people talk, I think that's definitely like, there was definitely conversation around of like, hey, you look the part. It's the leading man time. And the thing is that what we were going through was a renaissance for, there was a lot of, the industry was moving away from white men into more white women, talking about like the beginning of the Hunger Games and the beginning of Divergent. And that was like sort of what the industry was doing. And that was their progress at the time, 2013, 2014. They're like, that's the progress. We're doing the next step.
Mm.
So that sort of like getting off the teen show, and then it's the 90s, and the Keanu Reeves parts are there, the Johnny Depp parts are there, the Christian Slater parts are there, the Ethan Hawke parts are there. None of those were happening. What was there and what I built a career off of is being the person who listens to the woman as she goes through what she's going through. And so what I actually had myself positioned in was like something that happened to a lot of women of color in the 90s, Halle Berry's and all these people, where you became this sort of integral side character that assisted with the leads and was a romantic interest.
Mm.
And so that was what was available to me. And it was a pretty thin meal, it's a tiny bit unsatisfying. Especially because I'm, as much as I'm interested in like career progression, I'm more interested in growth as an actor, like, mm-hmm. and being challenged by the by the industry. And yeah, there's no Dead Poets Society after, you know, like there's no like, you know, those movies just weren't being made. So I think that definitely there was people around me who I think unconsciously were, they're not necessarily selling me, they're not necessarily selling me something that wasn't possible, but I just think it wasn't big. They didn't have the insight to see what was actually happening culturally within the industry.
Right.
And so for me, it's like, anyway.
Do you remember going up for big parts and feeling like, oh, this is just going to go to the white dude, like, or, oh, maybe there is progress being made, or they were just.
There was a part of me that like, okay, so in order to keep the dream alive and to show up every day and to do it as long as I have been doing it,
yeah,
it does take a certain, you have to believe in the dream. You have to believe in the, because it is possible. It happens every once in a while, but it's about the margins of possibility. And they are different. Margins of possibility are different for different people.
Right.
And that's something that I think I became more aware of. I mean, I was always in the mix. That's the thing about being like where I'm at, or being the person that I am, and being like sort of like prototypical of a particular type of actor we've seen before. If you're prototypical, if you fit into the archetype of like the Keanu Reeves, Johnny Depp, Christian Slater, like that thing, you fit into that archetype and you do the teen thing just like they did.
Mm-hmm.
You're good enough. You're in the mix, but you know, there's also, it comes a point where it's also what the industry is pursuing, and what they're in, the industry's interested in making.
And in pursuing your dreams, we've got to talk about your unique marketing thirst. I call it thirst trap marketing.
Yeah. It's
whose idea was that? Where did it come from? Was it something you planned, or was it sort of you were just?
I think it was a reaction to seeing what penetrates, for lack of a better word, the algorithm. You know, the algorithm itself is, I think that there is, you know, there's a lot of artists, I think people who make stuff are finding the algorithm a kind of complicated beast, because it likes being fed what it likes being fed.
Right.
And so it was, I do like playing with meta, like I like the meta-ness of of playing with what the, I also cut a version of my film with transitions from Victorious, the old show that I did.
Right.
Because the algorithm likes being fed what it likes being fed. And it will push out videos that a lot of the time, unfortunately, have sort of a simple fucking, you know, concept or you know, who that instigate an instant feeling, or you know, that's just how this the thing works. And so as I was going through sort of like funny things to do, it was a meta thing, you know. It's like I just like the idea of playing with what people expect out of me, and then also being able to supplant them, like when they go and actually watch the film that's like about the abuses of power and, you know, that like that's pretty like dark and serious.
Yeah.
Film that they, you know, it's almost like a joke for me, you know?
I mean, I look through your TikTok, and the TikTok that had the most views is the blue-eyed filter TikTok.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you literally say nothing. You're just like, yeah, I'd be really bad with these blue eyes.
Yeah, no? No, I know. And this is it. Like, there's a simplicity to it all, and then it becomes. Then you see how And then you can see it on the other side, like that's very inorganic, where you see like, you know, I don't know, like some, you see like, you know, Slim Jim, like trying to like commenting on videos and trying to be like hip.
Right.
And it's a very bizarre way to market. I mean, I guess I don't even think of it as marketing. It's like where I'm playing. Part of it is also playing with the social fiber, the web that we're all a part of, without even our actual, like, I don't know if we're even complying to be a part of it, but we are, you know, like part of it. Like, and so there's things that get pushed to the forefront through the algorithm. I've always been interested in what this is going to do to art and who gets it, who's right. allowed to make it.
Yeah.
What kind of art you're allowed to make.
Yeah.
And what art is going to be allowed to be seen. And I mean, here's a great example. We shouldn't be talking right now. I made a little indie, right? That Variety would not talk about generally.
Mm-hmm.
But then the thirst trap creates a marketing concept. And then the media responds, and it's an echo chamber of us talking.
Here
we are.
But it worked.
Yeah. That's my point. It works. And it's fun. Like, it's like, this is a punk rock DIY film. Like, this is a handmade film. Like, especially in the indie film world, you're taking films kicking and screaming into the world.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I edited every trailer for this film. I edited every piece of marketing material. Wow. Because I care about the film, and if you stay, if you're like, you think that this film has something to say, or you know, you stay on it, and it becomes, and part of that again DIY thing is like looking at the beast that is social, the social experiment that is social media, and seeing like where's there a little loophole or a little gap in the thing where you can try to bring a marketing idea to the forefront or get people to see something that they wouldn't normally see.
Did you ever think you'd be using your body?
Well, you know, as an actor, it's part of the part and parcel of the whole thing.
It's part of the marketing.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. I also like the joke.
Yeah.
I mean, the joke is the thing that's because it's half of the people's enjoyment of that video is, yes, the sort of thirst trappiness of it. But also it's the joke about the joke. It's making fun of that. This is how we have to, you know, when you see all these influencers selling fit tea, you know, with their in the gym, just with their shirt off. It's like, this is what we're talking about. Like, this is how that's funny to me. Where it's, the whole thing is funny.
When my editor texted me your TikTok, I started watching it. I was like, is he drunk? Why is he? And then obviously I watched it. I'm like, you know what? It worked.
Yeah.
It worked.
And that's it, right? Like, it, you know, the old, and not to get too serious, but there's a scarier version of this where people know these things and create mistakes and stuff on purpose to manipulate the audience. And it's interesting. Like I think we're getting to a very weird place with marketing. I mean, ultimately though, I mean, for the film itself, like there's these people who come for the thirst trap or whatever. And then, but then there's also like, there's a film with that resonates with them. And when you're trying to make a film for a specific group of people who you want to see the film, it's amazing what can start as one thing and then become a very different thing.
So has it paid off? Did you see views of the movie go up?
I've seen a lot of people who watch the film who probably wouldn't. And then, they text me this, they then they DM me this like really moving thing about the film and about like a real good a really good, like sort of deep dive into what's the film about,
right,
off of a thirst trap. It's great.
Who were your mentors in putting this film together? Who did you turn to?
You know, it's funny. I really wish I had more really wish I had more mentors. I mean, I think that like, I felt very much on my own on this film, which is also probably why, you know, why I feel like I, you know, you end up handcrafting all these things, marketing things or whatever. I had the real great luck of working with Greg Araki, who I think is an amazing filmmaker.
Yeah.
And just picking their brain. And I've been in great hands. Mm. You know, 15 years of acting, you know, you've seen stuff. Yeah. You've seen the stuff. I think you've seen a lot of stuff not work. And then that becomes also part of it.
So what's the next film you want to make? What's the next script you have?
I am obsessed with, I think so often people of, the reason why I made this film and not a film about like, I don't know, being mixed race. And like, I probably get that film made in an hour. Mm. I made a film that has nothing, that my identity is not what sells the film. And that's another version of this, which is like trauma for currency. Mm-hmm. You know, like that exchange. I'm obsessed with seeing people of color in stuff we've seen before that's sort of iconic concepts of, that are sort of iconic, like a film noir or like, you know, and this plugging in people we haven't seen before, do it. Mm. That's sort of my mission. If I have a mission statement for films, that's what I want to do. I want to make films where like, so that people of color are not always connected to trauma.
Right, yeah.
Because at a certain point, as filmmakers, we have to take a responsibility for exploiting our own pain. Trauma.
Yeah.
Pain. And everyone of color, LGBTQ people. And there's no shame in that. Like that is, there's some great films that have come out of that. And there's a hell of a lot of great careers that are started with that idea. That's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to make a film that shows the world that I can world build and I can create a story that's imaginative and fairy tale like that has nothing to do with my identity.
So what's that next genre you want to tackle?
Some horror, something in horror. Like yeah. I think it's really a really cool genre for exploring and sci-fi. Sci-fi has always been there for people of color and as a way to explore different combinations and stuff. I like stuff like Bridgerton, Marvelous. It's Jane Austen. It's not like, we're not reinventing the wheel here.
We're just
watching other people do it. And that's what my film was supposed to be. It's like film noir. We're not reinventing the wheel. We're just watching other people do it. And it has merit, you know, as a genre.
So my last question for you, you talk about, you know, the opportunities weren't there for you as someone of color. Mm. Are the opportunities there for you now?
I think it's changing and developing. I think that, but again, that's why I'm making films. The way the type of opportunities, I think need to the connection of identity to tragedy is, I think, limiting the amount of roles that people like me can go and do. I just want to make vampire movies with brown and black people. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to, like, and I think the audience wants that too.
Mm.
And so to answer your question in short, maybe where I think hope, this is my little submission as a film, conceptually, that hopefully that we go and pursue just making films that allow these actors to become stars, because that's something that's just not there, I think, right now.
This is awesome.
Cool. Yeah, thank you so much.
It was a good start for my weekend. It was a good conversation on a Friday afternoon.
I appreciate it.
Congratulations. I'm glad we got to chat.
Yeah, thank you.
And I can't wait to see what you do next.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
That was Avan Georgia. And that's it for this week's Just for Variety. Thanks for listening. Until next time, make sure to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Mark Malkin. And for all breaking and exclusive Hollywood news, you know where to go. Go to variety.com. See you next time.